not old, but like Matilda, he had made a season of his own around him, and it was colder and darker than winter. Matilda found she could not speak to him. She merely held out her flowers, and rather than look at him, she looked past him at the picture he was painting. A blue-eyed woman in a blue dress was braiding her long brown hair. Something shone in the candlelight. A tear, like a glassy beetle on a smooth golden leaf, was creeping down the woman's cheek. Putting her flowers down on a pile of old books, Matilda fled, for of all the paintings, this one frightened her the most. Down the stairs and through the open door she ran, and then stopped, astonished to find tears on her own cheek. She could not have said why she was crying. Outside, nothing had changed. The world seemed exceptionally clear and understandable, its edges sure, its shapes continuous. As Matilda ran home, the magician's tower was left behind. Her memories of it grew fainter, nor did she dream of it at night. By morning, she was happy again, happy enough to feel ashamed of her flight the night before. There's no point in taking flowers to a known magician and then running away because you happen to see something magical. I shall go back and speak to him. He isn't old, just sad and strange, she said to herself. So that evening, Matilda found herself once again at the magician's tower, and once again the door was open. Quickly, before she could be overcome by the strangeness of the tower, Matilda ran up the stairs, looking away from the faces that looked down at her, up and up, watching her own climbing feet until she entered the magician's room again. The cave had gone. Instead, the magician sat in a forest of ancient trees. His books lay on a rustling, crisp carpet of fallen leaves, and he himself was less man than bird, covered in feathers which were crimson over his heart, golden on his cheeks and around his dark eyes, and red and gray over his head and down his back. The forest seemed to retreat beyond the possible boundaries of the tower, and the silence went deeper still. The painting stood on its big easel, but there were no paints and no brushes, for the magician was now working with the colors of his visions. Matilda spoke quickly before she had time to become afraid. I'm sorry I ran away yesterday, she said. I hope you liked my flowers. The magician remained silent, pointing to his picture. The blue-eyed, brown-haired woman was now holding the bundle of primroses and forget-me-nots. Each flower shone with a light of its own, no longer a simple sign of spring, but full of a different, darker promise, beautiful, but menacing. The magician gestured toward the flowers again as if to say, look closely. And Matilda walked over to stare deep into the heart of the picture's flowers. Through the paint they showed their truth to her, their hard struggle under the earth, their rise to power in the spring. The magician offered her a wooden cup filled with water. As he held, Matilda noticed the back of his hand was covered with little blue and green feathers. Those below his fingernails were as small as marigold seeds. The water tasted of leaves. The berries he gave her were sweet and sharp. Matilda smiled and thanked him, and, though he did not smile back, she imagined she saw kindness in his eyes. He did not speak either, but when a moment later she went down the stair, a strange cry, a cool cry, both soft and harsh, came after her, and she knew that the magician had cried out to her in the voice of a fabulous bird. He's enchanted. He stopped being a human being, Matilda thought. Perhaps if I bring him a present, he'll become a person again, like Prince Frog. Now, when she walked past a clump of crocuses, they seemed to have changed in some way. No longer were they just pretty flowers, but a force of spears cutting through the dark and cold, beautiful and ruthless spirits driving winter before them. The following day, Matilda came to the magician's tower for the third time and found there was no cave at the top of the stairs and no forest of ancient trees either. Instead, there was a wide plain stretching as far as she could see. As the wind swept over it, billowing grasses reflected the light in shifting waves, and it seemed to Matilda that the wind was writing a huge message over the plain, a message she might read herself if only she were cleverer. Then something moved far away. She forgot the scribbling wind and looked up to see what was coming towards her. Herds of galloping horses, red, white, and black, shook the ground as they came nearer and nearer. For a moment, Matilda imagined she was going to be trodden into the grass. But they wheeled and reared before her and then began feeding peacefully, all except the leader of the herd who stood over her, his red and gray mane blowing against her face. She smiled with relief to see the eyes were the eyes of the magician. "Oh, it's you," she said. "I've brought you a present, a loaf of bread which I made myself. Do you eat bread when you're a horse?" The horse began to change its shape, shifting so swiftly that she couldn't quite see what was happening until he stood before her, almost a man, but a man with a mane growing down his neck and back, a man with the ears of a horse. "Thank you for the bread," he said, and those were the first words she heard him speak, talking in the voice of a rusty key turned in an old lock. "It's a long time since I had a present, and now I have two within a week." "I don't count the flowers," Matilda said.
"I do," said the magician.
Matilda started going to the tower every day, and every day she took something with her. An empty snail shell, a hawk's feather, a nutshell filled with mosses and tiny ferns. At the top of the stair she might find a seashore, a desert, a mountaintop, or fields of snow and ice. But the magician was always there, and whatever she brought him he took and changed for her. Bread was never the same for her after she had given some to the magician. Cutting a slice, she would feel the slow growth of the wheat, the ripening of the grain, the rain that had fallen on it, the sun that had shone. She herself became the bread, living for a little in it like a good spirit under the arch of its crust. "For goodness sake, Matilda," cried her mother, "you're a proper dreamer these days. The sooner you're married, the better, that's all I can say. You take a day to cut a slice of bread." Matilda blinked, thinking that she had lived in the bread for what seemed like 100 years. One day, the magician, shining in silver scales, half fish, half dragon, gave her a book to look at. The first few pages were covered in drawings, but then the words took over. Many languages, in many different sorts of writing. There was no title page. "This is the book of the magicians of the tower," he told her. "This is the book of changes." On the first page there was a wise, cool face drawn in charcoal, eyes cast down, a smile at the corners of its mouth. Suddenly the eyes looked up out of the page as if they recognized Matilda, lips open as if to speak. Before any words were spoken, however, the face darkened and changed and then changed again, so that from the same page many faces looked rapidly out at her, faces black as storm, bright as day, old and young, smiling, glaring, laughing, weeping. At the very last, she thought she recognized first one face and then perhaps another, but before she could be sure, the first face returned again, with its eyes shut and its mouth stern, a face refusing to tell. Matilda looked at the magician shyly. "I thought I saw your face for a minute," she said. She could not talk about the other faces that she might have recognized. "Those are the faces of the magicians of the tower," the magician answered. "There were others before me." "I thought you had been here always," Matilda cried. "There has always been a magician in the tower." "I am not one, but many," the magician told her. "Others have been before me, and there will be others after me." Matilda frowned. "But why?" she asked at last. "What do you do here, you magicians?" "We think about the world," the magician said. "And after a while, we become the world, as you have seen. We go into birds and mud, and into horses, thistles and fireflies. We become stones and cobwebs and waves in the sea. We are born over and over again, and we rot. Without the dreams of the magicians, perhaps the world would become thin and uncertain. Perhaps the world you see is held together by our dreams. Perhaps, without us, birds would leave their trees to swim in the sea, babies would be born with tails and manes of lions, and witches, who feed on disorder, would take over everything. The magicians hold the patterns of the world together. Their lives are like stitches in patchwork.
I hope that visitors don't put you off then, Matilda said, laughing a little. You talk more than you used to, Mr. Magician. Don't forget your dreaming.
The magician gave her a look, both kind and sad, which for some reason terrified her, and she left the tower thinking, I don't need to go back again. I'll never go back.
But she came back the next day and began to read the Book of Changes, where it lay open upon the bank of an angry river. She read until a bunch of decaying reeds became a swirling mist and then gradually a man. From then on, though the magician became better at talking, Matilda became better at silence. Her silences led her to feel like the seed in the ground. She, too, broke open to release the white downward bending root and the pale upward turning shoot. She, too, held up the first blind leaves like hands. She became the tiny egg, the creeping greedy caterpillar, the jeweled chrysalis, and the butterfly. Coming out of a dream of birds, she was alarmed to find her hands covered in tiny feathers, as soft and brown as her hair. But as she stared, they melted and ran down her fingers, like drops of water from a stream. In the world outside the tower, people noticed Matilda changing.
Matilda, what's gotten into you? Cried her mother anxiously. Don't just stand there staring at the sky. There's nothing up there to see. Not even a cloud. Not even a bird.
I'm looking at the stars, Matilda heard her own voice say, sounding like a voice faintly heard from another far-off room.
There aren't any stars, her mother replied desperately. It's broad daylight.
And so it was. But Matilda could see the stars spread like grains of salt spilt across the afternoon sky.
You've changed, said her lover. You don't listen to me anymore. I scarcely ever see you. Where are you every afternoon? Why do you plait your hair now? I liked it loose.
To keep it out of my eyes, Matilda stammered. Out of my eyes while I'm reading.
She tried to listen to his voice, but the voices of the trees filled her ear. Some drowsy with winter, some stormy and leaping with the new spring. She tried to see his face clearly, but the faces of the magicians, dark and fair, flickered before her, dazzling her with sunlight and shadow. People around her began to flash and fade like moths dying in a candle flame. In the world outside the tower, things began to change before her very eyes. Bare trees blossomed, broke into leaf, swelled with green fruit. The fruit ripened and fell. The leaves turned golden and, falling too, sank into the ground like water, leaving the tree bare once more.
I mustn't go to the tower again, Matilda thought.
But the Book of Changes had laid its enchantment on her. Later that day, she looked up from reading the book to find the magician offering her wild strawberries, and she couldn't tell whether she had been reading, looking at pictures, or living in the print on the page. The book talked of secret rocks that no man saw melting and seething in the heart of the world, of tiny mosses that lived and died undiscovered, a fish swimming in the black heart of the sea, lit only by their own luminous sides, of the forces clenching atoms together or wrenching them apart.
Everything changed, said the book. Men and plants and animals were born and died and crumbled in magical decay, mountains worn away. The moon grew cold, the stars fell in on themselves and were crushed into nothingness.
Everything changes, sang the voices in her ears. You are changing. You are changing.
Now the tower was the only place where things stood still for Matilda. Her parents, her lover, were like puppets in a play that was being acted both forwards and backwards at the same time. She did not always know if she were seeing them today, yesterday, or tomorrow. But the magician did not change. In the tower, the stone stayed still, and the pictures no longer moved as she walked past them. One day, Matilda woke up and opened her eyes, not on the walls of her room, but on a grove of trees. Putting on her blue dress, the trees were felled and cut into timber. As she combed her hair, the walls of the house rose about her, and for a moment she stood in her safe, familiar room. But as she braided her hair, the house tumbled at some moment in the future, and grasses, like lean flames, rose up through the cracks in the boards. Reflected in her looking glass, she saw not her own face, but a desert of ice and snow, lit with a lurid light reflected from the looking glass sky that was hung with curtains of fire. Like someone blinded, she groped her way where she had once run, over a familiar road that she glimpsed briefly before it burst into a wilderness of weeds and blackberries and then vanished entirely. Somehow she reached the tower and fell through that terrible open door. She sat on the bottom step with her eyes closed, while behind her lids the world still whirled and swayed, offering everything of itself at once. When she opened her eyes at last, she saw the picture of the boy in green offering his primroses and forget-me-nots. Matilda sighed and stood up wearily. Then she walked up the stairs. The room at the top of the stairs was a room with walls and bookcases and windows looking out over the countryside. The magician stood beside a large old desk straightening papers. He wore green velvet, his hair had been cut, and red curls now hung down to his collar. "Oh," said Matilda, seeing something for the first time, "you are the boy in the painting at the bottom of the stairs." "Yes," said the magician, "and look there." He pointed to a painting on a wooden stand. There was the painting of the woman with the braided brown hair and the blue dress, the painting she had seen when she first visited the tower. There was the reflection which her looking-glass had refused to reveal that morning. "It's me," said Matilda. "You were painting my picture when I brought you the flowers." "No," he replied. "I was painting the picture of the next magician."
"I don't want to be the magician,"
Matilda cried desperately, but he shook his head. "That's what we all say," he answered.
"Why did you choose me?"
she cried again. "I didn't choose you, though I saw you coming towards me," the magician replied. "It's always the world that chooses its magicians. It sent you the flowers, and it opened the door of the tower. It always knew what you were, where you would be. And believe me, Matilda, there is no place for you now outside the tower. The magicians who refuse the tower go mad out there. Seasons riot. The people they love are born, grow old, and fall to dust 1,000 times a day. The hands of the clock spin like windmills. Here, at least, you'll be able to understand something. Think bird and be bird. Think grass and be grass. Be fish, be moth, be star, be stone. As you live in these things, the world will hold still outside the tower for your mother, your father, your lover, too.
What will they think now I'm gone? They'll miss me. I know they'll miss me.
They will miss you, but in the end they'll forget you. People don't remember forever, the magician told her. And now the time has come when I must go too, for you are the new magician, and I must move one place on.
What's your next role? Matilda asked curiously. I won't know till I get there, the magician said. I'll know soon.
You too, someday. One place further on. First, they hung her picture next to his at the bottom of the stairs. On my way, he said, smiling. Then he stepped out of the door of the tower into the sunshine, which dissolved him at once. Up he went like a mist drawn into the spring air. Then the door closed and could not be opened again. Matilda climbed upstairs under the dark and light faces of the pictures, like the faces of night and day. And she thought bird, and flew high in the sky. She thought stone, and lay like a silent heart in the breast of the world. She thought fire, and blazed in the core of the mountains. Outside the tower, people wept for her, and finally forgot her. But she thought leaf, trapping sunlight in her green cells. Storm and tempest raged around the tower like black lions, but she thought summer, and became golden. For she truly was the magician of the tower, and would be until some other person came with a handful of flowers to set her free. For there has always been a magician in the tower, and there always will be.
she looked out of the window as white as any milk.
And he looked in at the window as black as any silk.
Hello, 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 you coal blacksmith, you have done me no harm. You never shall take me maidenhead, which I have kept so long. I'd rather die a maid.
Ah, but then she said, and be buried all in me grave. Then to have such a nasty, husky, dusty, musty, fusky coal blacksmith, a maiden I will die. Then she became a duck. A duck all in a stream, and he became a water dog and fetched her back again. Hello, 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 you coal blacksmith, you have done me no harm. You never shall take me maidenhead, which I have kept so long. I'd rather die a maid. Ah, but then she said, and be buried all in me grave, than to have such a nasty, husky, dusty, musty, fusky coal blacksmith. A maiden I will die. Then she became a fly, a fly all in the air, and he became a spider and fetched her to his lair.
Hello, 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 you coal blacksmith, you have done me no harm. You never shall take me maidenhead, which I have kept so long. I'd rather die a maid.
Ah, but then she said, and be buried all in me grave, than to have such a nasty, husky, dusty, musty, fusky coal blacksmith. A maiden I will die.
Then she became a rose,
a rose all in the wood,
and he became a bumblebee and kissed her where she stood. Hello, 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 you coal blacksmith, you have done me no harm. You never shall take me maidenhead, which I have kept so long. I'd rather die a maid, but then she said,
and be buried all in me grave, than to have such a nasty, husky, dusty, musty, fusky coal blacksmith. A maiden I will die.
Then she became a star,
she became a star all in the night,
in the
and
night.
He became a thundercloud and muffled her out of sight.
Hello, 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 you coal blacksmith, you have done me no harm. You never shall take me maidenhead, which I have kept so long. I'd rather die a maid, but then she said, and be buried all in me grave, than to have such a nasty, husky, dusty, musty, fusky coal blacksmith. A maiden I will die.
You had a way of making me feel that class acts were the bar. And you had a way of taking what was not making any. The coast, and I don't think you're making the most of the fair. We used to place all the bets on the wheel and give the prize away. We used to eat hot pretzels and Foster and look out on the bay. Oh, but lately you've spent all your time at our desk, and I don't. You're making the best of the fair. Where's the boy that I used to know? Is it your age has changed and you so? And can it be nevermore we will go to the fair? Is it your age has changed and you so? And can it be nevermore we will go to the fair? Where's the boy that I used to know? Is it your age has changed and you so? And can it be nevermore we will go to the fair? Ooh.
lady's eye is a lady trapped inside her secret soul, where maggots vie for mastery, but magic takes control. She doesn't need her body, no, she only needs her mind to travel in the midnight mist and leave her shroud behind. Louisa is a lady free from misery and pain, but morning turns to sunrise and she starts it all again. She opens up her eyes to find she's back where she began, returning to uncertainty to bear this earthly sham. And Louisa wonders what tomorrow brings, golden painted rainbow past many other things. One points her towards the northern wind, another towards the sun. The third is to the sand and sea, last where day is done. Louisa is a lady dancing to the pipes of Pan, and as the moon arises you can hear her solemn chant. There's those who'd call her devil and would curse her soul to hell, but those that would confine her take the curse upon themselves. And Louisa wonders what tomorrow brings, golden painted rainbow past many other things. One points her towards the northern wind, another towards the sun. The third is to the sand and sea, last where day is done. Louisa is a maid accused of craft and sorcery, a demon cloaked in robes of black and veils of mystery. What evil is the healing with a word and a candle flame? More evil is the hatred wrought in God's most holy name. And Louisa wonders what tomorrow brings, golden painted rainbow past many other things. One points her towards the northern wind, another towards the sun. The third is to the sand and sea, last where day is done. Louisa is a lady doomed to pay her debt for life, a prisoner of society, can be no mortal wife. But walls of wood and iron hold her body, not her mind. With magic in the midnight mist, she'll leave her shroud behind. And Louisa wonders what tomorrow brings, golden painted rainbow past many other things. One points her towards the northern wind, another towards the sun. The third is to the sand and sea, last where day is done. What evil is the healing with a word and a candle flame? More evil is the hatred wrought in God's most holy name.